Stay in your lane. Stay in your lane, Lois.
Is that a Superman reference?
Lois Lane.
No, I know.
So
I got that
there
part.
There you go.
Hey!
Hi!
It's Mike.
And Dan.
This is Comparing Apples to Oranges, a monthly podcast where we get together, consume some media, and then compare it to another piece of media. Oh, I guess that's wrong. This is where we look at two things. We look at two things that do not belong in the same genre, but belong in the same category, and then we compare them using a set of criteria we devise, and then we tell you which one's better, even though you're not supposed to We're back. So we're going to compare two movies where their lead actor, their lead star, comes from a different genre of movie. So we watched The Number 23, which is a 2007 American psychological thriller film with Jim Carrey, best known for his comedic roles such as Ace Ventura. Dan said The Mask, which he's super into.
It's really good. It's really good. I don't know why you haven't seen it.
Dumb and Dumber. What else has he been?
Liar, Liar.
Yeah.
Yes, Man,
which I didn't watch.
Yeah. What's the one where he's he's God?
Bruce Almighty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just goofy stuff.
And
he's good at it.
Yeah. He, like, over-the-top humor, does a lot of weird stuff with his face, makes funny voices. I think the first time I saw Ace Ventura, I was expecting to be stupid, and I was very happy with how intelligent it was. Yeah. Like,
because Tone Loke's
quirky it was. And Tone Loke really made his way around the 90s in, like, non-well-known ways.
Yeah.
All right.
He did his thing, man.
So, Number 23 was, like, supposed to be a scary movie. I would not call it a thriller.
I'd call it a psychological thriller.
Interesting. Would you call it a psychological thriller film?
I would.
Okay.
And apparently Wikipedia also calls it that.
Directed by Joel Schumacher.
Oh, don't get me started. The guy who put nipples on the bat suit.
I mean, they were already there. He just put the camera on.
He accentuated them. So fucking Joel Schumacher, man.
He's got money.
This is a guy that
makes money.
But you know what? I'm mad at him, but I'm also not
because of the bat
because,
nipples.
Because I like nipples, but no. So
I'm a Batman. I love nipples. Why? Well, how could it go wrong?
So he directed. So Tim Burton did the first two Batman movies
with Michael Keaton, who we're about to talk
about. So it's synergy there.
That's one word for it.
And then Joel Schumacher did the last two. Including the third one with Jim Carrey.
As the Riddler.
Who we're talking about here, Synergy.
Yeah.
And so the third one, you know, it definitely was a different tone than
the
first
two. So that's Batman Forever.
Yeah.
It was the third one. The fourth one's Batman and Robin.
Okay. Which is just fucking awful. I mean, it's just awful. George Clooney.
Chris O'Donnell. I had to remember.
Nipples on the bat suit.
Here's the thing,
Alicia Silverstone.
As Batgirl.
Yeah. And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mr. Freeze.
And
Bane.
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman did a bad job in that movie. She should be ashamed
of
herself.
No, I think she fits in very well then in that movie. And so Joel Schumacher pisses me off because of Batman and Robin, and to some extent Batman Forever, which it wasn't as bad. But that forced Warner Brothers to go totally different with the tone of the Christopher Nolan movies.
Right.
Just to kind of wash out the stink.
Fix the rudder.
So if he hadn't made those shitty movies, then we might not have gotten the Christopher Nolan trilogy.
I appreciate that's a good way to look at it.
There you go.
It's like, well, after my house was hit by this tornado, I got to get a new house.
I got a new kitchen.
You're like, you know,
thanks, tornado.
What would have been great is not a natural disaster. Just like sometimes stuff happens and you don't need it to be shitty.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay to make a good movie.
We're looking at you, Joel.
We're looking at both these directors of these movies.
All right. And then our second movie, I know you're on pins and needles. You're like, oh, when are they going to talk about Michael Keaton again?
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, right now.
We watched Clean and Sober, a 1988 American drama film directed by Glenn Gordon Caron. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, it's definitely not a 1998 movie if you see the Michael Keaton's hair on the
or like
the cover.
any of the women in the movie, or glasses in the movie, or the way people talk.
The massive amounts of cocaine that are consumed,
which is just like
in this movie.
That's how they're gonna start the movie. Just like. Is that song from the 70s though?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Clapton was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
So Michael Keaton, Dan brought this up earlier, but we didn't get to record it. Michael Keaton, the same year this movie came out, Clean and Sober, he won an award for Beetlejuice, which is a great movie.
It
directed
is.
By Tim Burton.
Tim Burton. Synergy.
But I mean, like that.
That's why you come to this podcast.
The synergistic comments.
Interconnective.
We just point at it.
And wonderful humor.
There is a connection to last month's podcast with The X-Files and how much we hated William S. Burroughs. I guess it was like talking. I don't know what. Because I don't want to call it spoken word because he wasn't doing a great job of speaking. And most of the things he said, I could not identify as words. But he's a really out there writer. And one of his books is like Naked Lunch. That's like the most common one that people know about. And he's just like a weirdo on purpose. He was the first person to believe in the 23 Enigma, which is all that this movie, movie 23, or the number 23 is about.
Right. And I didn't even realize that was like a...
an actual thing
like a culture that people...
know about.
Yeah.
Just nonsense.
That people follow their lives by.
And like a college professor... Is he a college professor? The guy who Jim Carrey's worried his wife's cheating on him with? Is he a college professor? Because like he knew about it.
Yeah.
I thought they like went to meet him at college or whatever. Anyway, so Clean and Sober also has Ron Howard as a co-producer, and Ron Howard previously directed Michael Keaton in comedies such as Night Shift and Gung Ho, which I have seen neither of.
Gung Ho's pretty good.
I'm trying to remember.
I think that's the one where they're like the factory workers, and the Japanese are they're like American factory workers, and like the Japanese company like buys out. The factory, and of course the Japanese workers like are more efficient and work harder. And
nice.
So there's like this like culture. They're like trying to teach like the American workers like how to be more efficient.
And then the Americans teach them how to laugh.
I think Norm.
How to love.
Norm is in it from Cheers.
Norm.
Yeah, he's in it. It's pretty good. I'm trying to look up. Michael Keaton, whose real name is Michael Douglas, by the way.
That's probably wrong.
No, it is. And that's why he had to change it to Michael Keaton, because there was already a Michael Douglas in...
No, just go by Mike Douglas. that's a guy too, right? He's a news
like
broadcaster.
A reporter?
Yeah.
This just in, coming on the wire.
Give you Mikey D?
Mikey D. That's what he should have done.
Or Doug Michaels.
Speaking of Mikey D, he played... Mickey D's
he's the founder.
Founder Ray Kroc in the movie The Founder.
Didn't see that. So I think that's supposed to be a serious movie.
Yeah.
Because Michael Keaton went on to he's in Birdman. He was in some more serious stuff.
Yeah, he realized that he was actually a good actor.
Like an actor.
An auteur.
An auteur is like the author. So that'd be the director or the writer.
So, I'm looking up Michael Keaton. We got Night Shift, Mr. Mom. You ever seen Mr. Mom? That's good.
I saw some of it. I don't remember all of it. I saw Multiplicity, which I wasn't a huge fan of.
Johnny Dangerously.
Nope.
Gung Ho. Touch and Go. The Squeeze. I haven't seen most of these movies, but just by looking at the movie cover, where you can tell that it's just,
drawn. It's not a photograph.
You can just tell that it's... The Squeeze is Michael Keaton and... a young lady embraced, and there are, I believe it's the Twin Towers in New York City being squeezed together by a pair of enormous hands. Can I show you this picture right here? I know this is great for radio, but
dude, that's not great for anything. That's dumb.
To show pictures.
Never forget. That's pretty messed up. I don't like that.
Los Trampolosos de Loto? I don't know why there's a...
I'm pretty sure that's the Spanish one you're looking at.
The Spanish version of... So
the
apparently Michael Keaton had a big Spanish career. And the A mysterious black box spells danger to a con man and a female detective. Sounds hilarious.
I'd watch none of that.
And shenanigans ensue. And then you got Beetlejuice, and then Clean and Sober, and then The Dream Team, which is a comedy, I'm assuming.
But none of these are ringing bells. I loved Beetlejuice.
Yeah. And then Batman came right after that.
Right.
And I remember when Batman came out, you know, there was
podcast. Yeah, because of Prince. Yeah. Rest in peace, brother.
Rest in peace, man. There was all this, backlash about him being picked to be Batman because outside of Clean and Sober, which had come out the year before, he hadn't done any kind of serious roles. Right.
And the thing is, like, Batman...
Much less be a buffed up superhero.
That's the thing is, you don't need to be serious to be Batman. You have to be, like, threatening and in good shape. Uh-huh. And I guess they're like, his mullet speaks otherwise. He's like, no, don't worry. I'll cut some of it.
Yeah, Michael Keaton has proved over the years that he can be a very, threatening, creepy motherfucker.
Most recently in the newest Spider-Man movie, right? He's the bad guy in that.
Yeah, and he's, like, a creepy dude, man. I mean, he's...
Maybe it's just because he's old now.
He's very menacing.
He's like, I don't need to have the sex appeal anymore. I'll just be a creep. Looking at you, Willem Dafoe. When was he ever attractive? Spider-Man again. But seriously, I've seen him in... He was in Platoon when he was, a young man. Mm-hmm. He still looked like the goddamn Green Goblin. Yeah. They found the role for him. They're like, we're just going to put more lights on you because actually looking at you is frightening.
Hey, you asleep yet?
And then, of course, he had James Franco as a son. That makes sense to me in real life. Yeah. All of that makes sense to me.
Do you know Michael Keaton was on an episode of The Simpsons?
If you're not on an episode of The Simpsons.
As Jack Crowley?
If you're not on The Simpsons, then
do you know who that is? You being a big Simpsons fan?
I don't recognize the name. I need a synopsis of the episode.
I got you.
Tell you a quote from it if you want.
Right on.
Depends on it. It was in the 2000s. I don't think I...
We'll have an intern look it up.
All right. So let's go ahead and talk about movies where actors get typecast and they try to break out. I'm thinking Ross from Friends. Mm. His breakout was... I think he was in Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But, everybody's like, wow, Ross is doing a great job because it was just Ross in the army.
Rachel.
He was a stick in the mud that nobody liked, and that was the whole episode.
Well, Rachel,
dinosaurs.
I'm an archaeologist.
Yeah.
Museum.
Right.
That's our David Schwimmer. You're welcome.
Apparently, he's, an incredible, director, and he does a lot for, feminist movement in movies and film, or film and television, which I didn't pick up on, in the fact that he was a nerd in the 90s and he wore a lot of open flannel shirts, and now he's that's all I know him as, because it was nine seasons of Friends, so
10 I think, yeah,
some incredible number where Ross has a baby and you're like, okay, stupid Ross. You're the worst friend.
Yeah, you are the worst friend. Of the six, if I had to rank them, he would be the worst.
The worst, of course.
Yeah.
So what other movies come to mind when you're like, oh, somebody who gets typecast? I was noticing, I tried to look up some lists,
mm-hmm.
because the only ones I could think of were movies I'd already seen, because, mm-hmm. yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool, when we were younger and... Arnold Schwarzenegger started
doing
comedies.
Yeah, that was a good point.
I thought that was a real novel idea, and I didn't know how it would work.
I didn't think about that.
But he ended up being really good at it.
Because he'd always play the straight man. He never did any of the jokes, which is just thank God, because comedy's not funny sometimes.
Yeah. I think you really got to see that, when he came to America and he couldn't even speak English and he was just, a bodybuilder.
Literally played a robot well.
Yeah. Very well. Yeah, and he was just, he learned English and, let his personality show and ended up becoming freaking governor. And
which says a lot about California.
Yeah, it does. California.
Reagan.
Whoa, Schwarzenegger. Let's not get political here.
No, he was also a movie star.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. I thought you were just going to shit on Ronald Reagan.
I mean, I kind of just did. I mean, he's a movie star. He sucks.
Yeah.
He's a bad person.
He wasn't a very good actor, but... Bedtime for Bonzo.
I didn't see any of his... Why would I see any of his movies? Yeah. I only like modern cowboy movies.
He was in a movie with a monkey called Bedtime for Bonzo.
I was trying to watch... I was trying to get Every Which Way But Loose, but I couldn't find it on Netflix or Amazon, so I knew you wouldn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
Have you already seen it?
No.
I was also trying to see Paint Your Wagon. But yeah. I realized I've talked about like Clint Eastwood a lot on this podcast.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Because you want to bang him.
Well, he's like 100, so
yeah.
It'd be novel at this point.
What were you talking about?
Shooting dust. I noticed from the list.
Almost, we're talking about Arnold. That's right.
Yeah. Almost everybody on the list was a white guy. Mm-hmm. Like, female actors.
What list are you referring to?
Like 6 or 7 lists that I tried to look up where it's like...
Just like actors who stepped out of their comfort zone.
Most well-known, like comedians who became... or like comedians' best-known drama role. Or somebody like moved into a different genre and it was like well-known. But
I mean, I think in the last few years, a couple... Like Adam Sandler had one.
Punch Drunk Love.
And Will Ferrell had one.
He had a couple.
Yeah. But I guess with both of them, I was going to say particularly with Will Ferrell, but I mean, Adam Sandler was as goofy as they came in the 90s, you know?
Big Daddy was sort of like a good medium.
It was a transition.
Him,
yeah,
where you're like, he might be able to do something else. And then Funny People is just stupid.
Yeah, it wasn't funny.
I did not like it.
It wasn't funny at all.
They're like, he's not going to be funny. You're like, okay. Like, you have to try to be funny. Like,
yeah,
it's
a
not
movie
that
called Funny People about comedians is not
Aziz
funny.
Ansari was in it as his own character, Rodney. Is it Rodney or... Yeah. Randy! As, like, his own character, Randy, who he makes up in a sketch in his, like, real life stand-up. And he's that character in the movie, and he's the only funny... No, I think... Is the RZA in it?
That's a Judd Apatow movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You liked Knocked Up, I'm sure.
It was all right.
See, I didn't like it.
It was, I mean, 40-Year-Old Virgin was good.
That's true.
I really liked that, but like...
Oh, Steve Carell.
Yeah.
He's been some...
Yeah,
he's
been
he was some
in
serious stuff.
Foxcatcher.
Which I didn't see, but
I didn't
it
see
makes
either,
me nervous.
But he's got like a weird nose.
I
want to
see
movie.
It, but I'm going to be uncomfortable.
And apparently it got nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards.
Because like in Little Miss Sunshine, he was a more serious version of like his personality. Like he was still funny, but it was just more serious.
What was the one that he was in, like The Life of Dan or
yeah.
This is Dan?
Where his face
I am Dan.
Was.
A,
I think
yeah,
it's Life
on,
of Dan.
He's on his
pancakes.
Face is on a pillow.
No, it was pancakes. His face was in pancakes.
His face was in pancakes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny. See, it stuck with you.
Yeah, I watched that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, me and my wife.
Life
it.
According to Dan.
Yeah, something like that.
We're getting close.
The World According to Dan.
World according. Garp According to Dan.
Yeah, that's it. Nailed it. First try. But. No, that movie's not good. Like, it's not, like, I mean, I guess, like, it's kind of, like, that's, like, one of the things we're going to talk about is, like, how you can bring your comedic talents into a dramatic role.
Right.
And I guess Steve Carell did that pretty good in that movie, and the fact that he was kind of charming at times mm-hmm. with his funny side. But it just wasn't I just don't think it was very good material to work with.
That's fair.
And I think that I haven't seen Foxcatcher, but from what I hear, he does a really good job
with good material.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is like, that's kind of hard to do sometimes.
And like Channing
too.
Tatum's in it, and
our boy,
Mark Ruffalo, I think, is
in
it. I
like him too.
So,
and that's so, what I was trying to say was like the only examples I could find were like. That weren't white men was like Charlize Theron mm-hmm. when she played like the murder this
monster
the first female serial killer
mm-hmm.
yeah and Oprah oh no Whoopi Goldberg in The Color Purple
mm-hmm.
and I'm like but when I thought back I'm like Whoopi I guess she was only in comedies like Sister Act the one where she was a cop with a future dinosaur partner you remember that movie
no
also Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yep. Eddie.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I never considered her not a good actress. Like, I always thought, I don't know.
What about Ghost?
Didn't see Ghost.
When she
bangs
Demi Moore.
Yeah. I don't know. So is that acting? pretty hot. That's the thing, is like she was always like, it's just expected for like female actors to like move in and out of like serious roles or like rom-coms. Like Amy Adams is one of my like favorite actresses, and I'm like, oh, I'll find one of the, no, she's just like, it's just expected to her to do like romantic comedy, you very can, serious role, yeah, you can drama, do
musicals.
Was she in a musical?
Enchanted? Is that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good example. Yeah. But that's like a comedy, though, right?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's like a family.
And I
like
think she Disney was in thing. The Muppet movie.
Uh-huh.
The most recent one.
Uh-huh.
So it's just
and
she, like...
And so she's expected to not only be dramatic, be funny, but also sing and dance.
Like, and it's like in family movie and all this other stuff.
And she does it all very well.
So it's, yeah, I think that's just sort of expected. And then it's a big deal when... Like Adam Sandler's like, I'm not gonna fart audibly in this movie, and everybody's like, oh,
that is weird.
He did it.
Like, that is weird. Like when you, I mean, there was like this whole joke on South Park, like a running joke this past season about women being funny.
Yeah.
And like Cartman would say it like tongue in cheek, like, yeah, get over it. Women are funny.
Yeah.
Deal with it. But he was really, you know, he was just trying to appease everybody,
right,
by saying that. And the whole genesis of that came from the most
Bill
recent
Collins.
Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, okay.
and how much shit, you know, it was getting. But and people say, get over it. Women are funny. Deal with it. You know, Amy Schumer talks about her vagina. It's hilarious. But, you know, and that's just the whole season was playing on that fact that, you know, people don't assume that,
right,
that women are, I mean, when there's like a, when I see a stand up show by a woman that's really good, I'm kind of surprised by it, and that's just the misogynist in me.
Well, it's that's true, of course, because you hate women.
Yeah,
but
no
all,
doubt, no doubt.
In all fairness, you do hate yourself too.
That's true.
So
because I watched both of these movies this week, so I obviously hate myself quite a bit.
And you want to talk about them?
Yeah,
and make other people.
We're gonna talk for 3 hours.
Maybe
about
you
them.
Hate everybody.
Yeah,
that's what we're bound to. We're bound to that. But it's also like there's a reason we get surprised of that is because there's not the same amount of men and women comedy specials. Like, so when a good one comes out, you're like, oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it literally stands out because there's not a lot to compare it to.
Who are some of the best women comedians, in your opinion?
So I just recently watched Nikki Glaser's stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
That was hilarious. Maria Bamford is so funny, and she does a lot of crazy stuff and a lot of, like, sad stuff, and she's really good.
Mm-hmm. I watched Ali Wong's stand-up.
Oh, my God.
Recently.
Baby Cobra?
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, that was really
so
good.
So funny.
That was really good.
I
mean, I'm a big fan of, like, I think there's so many talented women on, like, Saturday Night Live that they just cycle in,
yeah,
like, every year.
And they, like, bounce around to other stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's just expected for those, like, if you do well enough, you'll get a movie.
Yeah.
Which is, like, awesome.
And that's what, yeah, that's kind of, like, you're on there for a few years, and then you know, hit it big, and
but,
you
like,
leave.
But Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig have done, I think, the best of all of them. Because Molly Shannon was funny, but you know what's not funny is, like, a movie about a TV, like, character. Like, you know, that's not true. There are a handful of successful ones, but mostly, like, Mike Myers. Like, he was he just did the transition from, like, TV star comedian to, you know, silver screen comedian. He did it pretty effortlessly, and then he sort of paved the way for the other guys.
What am I mean, I anytime Leslie Jones is on Saturday Night Live, like, I have to watch, because she never drops the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just so hilarious. And especially, you know, because she is, I think she's in her 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's, you know, not the typical, you know, age and prototype that you would see from, like, the, you know, who Saturday Night Live has cast before. Usually,
right,
like, young, white, female,
right,
you know, attract,
pretty
very
skinny,
attractive,
yeah,
female actresses. But, God, she's just great on everything she does. So, you know, hopefully we're starting to see more kind of a renaissance, so to speak, of that.
So, I guess we're done talking about exciting, fun stuff. Let's talk about these two movies, Dan.
Boo.
Let's jump into our categories.
Boo.
Or categories. Jump into our criteria.
Boo.
Here we go. Let's talk about our criteria. We're going to do cast chemistry for these two movies. So, which, talking about synergy, let's talk about it. Which actors work together to make the script come alive? You know, sort of relationships did they develop? Were there some quirkiness going on where we could really see that they're making this shitty movie somewhat more pleasant to watch?
Yeah.
So, we also talked about how, because this is an actor trying something new, did a better job of stepping out of his comfort zone to try. I would say both of these are dramatic acting. So
yeah,
and they're both traditionally comedians, even though they're like vastly different kind of comedians.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because Michael Keaton's sort of like the everyman.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Carrey's sort of like the screwball comedy.
Except for in Beetlejuice, Michael Keaton just like turned it up to 11.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he definitely did. You want to talk about our other two?
Sure. Rewatchability, of course. Which one would you, you know, if it was on TV?
I might say recommendability, because there's no way. I'm not going to watch these again.
I'm not going to watch either one of them.
Sorry.
Again. But if you gun to your head, if you had to watch one of them again, I'm like, shoot me! I don't care!
Just shoot the DVD
I don't want to feel anything.
I don't want the internet for a little bit. Yeah. Just, I'll be fine.
So rewatchability. And then the last one was, we kind of had a hard time of putting it into words, but since they're both coming from comedy, which actor was able to, kind of like we talked about with Steve Carell earlier, kind of intertwine that those comedic chops into a dramatic role effectively and not in a forced way where they're trying to just like do drama but force like a joke in there every once in a while just to prove, hey, remember, I'm funny,
right?
You know, that so like who was did a better ability, or who did a better job of taking what they were have proven that they're good at and intertwining it into the new role?
It's like whenever Jean-Claude Van Damme is in a movie, he has to like do a high kick even though it's like totally out of character. So that would be a bad example of it. So we're going to talk about how these characters were able to bring a little bit of like comedy into the role to make it more, make that character more realistic or more, you know, redeemable or more believable. Okay, so Dan, let's just jump into it. Where do you want to go? Which you want 23 or you want Clean and Sober?
Let's do Clean and Sober.
All right, so I noticed that this movie came out in 88, which was after the movie Arthur, where it was like being a, you know, a drunk is funny.
If you get caught between the road and New York City.
I know that song. Is that from Arthur?
That's Arthur. It's called Arthur's Theme.
There you go.
The great Christopher Cross.
He's not bad. I think we talked about him. Oh, I'm thinking of Kris Kristofferson. And then this was before Leaving Las Vegas, which was when like addiction was not funny.
When it was cool.
No, I think that's Nicolas Cage's only Academy Award. So after he got that in every movie, they're like, Academy Award winner. Nicolas Cage is...
What? Where?
Ghost Rider. In Drive Angry. And Face Off.
Little synergy. Ghost Rider was released the same week that the number 23 was released.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And
I forgot about that.
Ghost Rider was number one at the box office, while the number 23, I believe, was number two.
So it sounds like a real shit week at the whole box office. Yeah. Like, stay home, ladies and gentlemen.
Stay home, ladies and gentlemen. Watch something on TV.
Or close your eyes until next week.
Or you can kill yourself. As
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So
as Louis C.K. said on his most recent stand-up, he goes, no, you don't have to go to the post office today. You can fucking kill yourself. You don't got to go to work.
All right, so
there's always a way out.
So Clean and Sober was right in between those two, where it's like it's acceptable to make a movie where dealing with sobriety and addiction is a serious topic. The movie starts with Michael Keaton as a hotshot real estate agent, which does not make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Real estate agents, usually, like, they're wearing a blazer,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to convince people to buy a house, and people are like, eh. But I guess this is the 80s, so...
Real estate was big in the 80s, man.
Apparently. And so he's, like, it's... We find out that he embezzles money within the first, like... The first 10 minutes of the movie, are we find out he's crooked, he's embezzling money, his own money, or, like, money from his firm. He's addicted to cocaine.
He's a womanizer.
And he, like, is pretty callous about, relationships with people. Because he's like, I don't know who this girl was. I woke up in my bed, but I'm biting her butt, and I find out she is overdosed. So,
yeah.
So I literally wrote down, wait, is this a dark comedy? Like, is this before its time? Because, like, it's funny because it's like he's, you know, trying to perform some pleasure on her while he's trying to make her take coke, and then, like, cut, like, smash cut to she's being wheeled out. I'm like, oh, is this supposed to be, all right, 80s, pretty weird stuff.
So, we get to the cocaine pretty quick.
Yep.
Review that I had says he picks up a woman in a bar and they do some cocaine together, and the next morning when she wakes up, she's dead.
Yeah. Which, like, spoilers a little bit, yeah. I guess, you know.
But, I mean, that's... So we don't know, you know, if she had a heart attack or whatever, but...
Then he,
you know, that's kind of sets up the premise of the movie. Of,
right.
You know, the title, Clean and Sober, Michael Keaton, you know, through a...
Pulls up his bootstraps.
Yeah.
Pulls himself up by his bootstraps.
But it's not like he wants to do it. It's almost like he goes into rehab and
to avoid the cops.
And meets Morgan Freeman, who's
your friend and mine,
who's apparently in this movie, who I had no idea until Morgan Freeman showed up.
Right. Just like this, we're going to bury him. We're going to bury this lead.
So he's like embezzling money from work and, or lost a whole bunch of money bad investments at work that he wasn't supposed to do.
Fuel his coke addiction.
Yeah.
He was going to, like, take all the money that he made and buy coke with it.
Yeah. And so he eventually just goes to rehab because, like you said, he just doesn't want to deal with the cops or his job or anything. He's like, oh, well, I was on a lot of coke, so I guess I'll go to rehab and get cleaned up.
Right.
But he doesn't take it seriously. He's there. He's hitting on the women. He's asking friends to, like, FedEx him cocaine
at the clinic.
So it's pretty depressing.
Yeah. And then through some stuff, he decides that he does want to get clean and sober, and with the help of a sponsor, you know, some more stuff happens, and then unrealistic stuff happens. Then it's I wouldn't say a love triangle, but something like that happens.
Yeah.
And then some more stuff happens.
Yeah, more shitty stuff
happens. And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the number 23.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's definitely a downer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a...
And it's not a downer for the reasons that I thought the critics were like, oh, this is a real look at sobriety. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's sad for, like, arbitrary reasons.
Yeah, like, and it's not like he, you know, it's a... What's the word I'm thinking of? Like, you know, he gets his shit together at the end. You know, he's still like...
He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
He's and that not woman's a good dead. Guy.
And,
and he stole so much money.
Several women end up dying.
Looking at you, Mikey D.
Yeah. Mickey D. Ray Kroc.
Golden arches my ass.
Uh-huh.
But it was just weird because at no point was he... a likable character.
Mm-mm.
And then we're just supposed to be on his side. And then, like, the whole stuff with, like, the love triangle, I'm like, what? You're not a good guy either. Yeah. Why should she leave you? Yeah. Or leave him
lesser,
for you?
Lesser of two evils.
And then...
That's like
spoilers!
It's like, I do cocaine, but I won't beat you up.
Or until...
Unless you take my cocaine.
Unless I get back on cocaine, which, like, the movie... I don't know why they just didn't go with, like, what real sobriety is like, where it's like people constantly struggle and then relapse a lot, and that's sad. Like, talk about that. Like, nobody in the movie relapsed.
But it is definitely a departure from...
Mr. Mom.
From Mr. Mom.
Let's hope so. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Maybe he does a lot of coke.
Where he makes
a
grilled cheese with a...
iron?
An iron.
That's how you're supposed to make
pretty
it.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, I'm laughing.
Yeah.
So that's good. Okay. Let's talk about the number 23. So it starts off, it's definitely the third sequel to Ace Ventura because he is an animal control officer.
He is, yep.
And his name is Walter Sparrow,
mm-hmm.
which you're like, oh, that's kind of dumb, until you find out that his son's name is Robin Sparrow.
Yeah.
That's so dumb, Dan.
Yeah.
Two birds?
Yeah.
With no stones?
No. Yeah, it's pretty, and it even starts off with him in his animal control vehicle...
Narrating.
Yeah. And
this movie's like really trying to push narration as a plot device and it gets confused.
And didn't he make like cat sounds at the
dog?
The dog.
Yeah, it was funny.
And
you know?
They're like, well, we got to start off with some goofy shit because it's Jim Carrey.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
Damn, it was so funny.
Yeah.
Remember? He's like, oh, sorry.
I remember.
His wife makes cakes.
I remember when it's funny.
It's cute.
Yeah.
But through some craziness, where he like insults a coworker, that's the chain of events starts, and mm-hmm. he gets bit by a dog,
mm-hmm.
and then his wife finds a book that she reads all of.
Yeah.
In I presume 20 minutes, and so then it takes him like a goddamn week to finish this book. I'm like. This is probably the scariest part. Illiteracy is scary.
Yeah, illiteracy
like, playing
is,
an illiterate dog,
an
like animal catcher.
Yeah.
That's a good movie. That's a dramatic role I'd see.
It's a problem in our
you're
country.
You're like, what's that dog's name? You're like, fuck, I don't know how to read. I don't know. I need my glasses. You know, like that would be. I want to see Jim Carrey sweat when people find out he doesn't know how to read.
He does a lot of sweating in this movie.
Makes
a lot of sweet love in this movie, too.
I don't know. It's pretty violent. Pretend you have a knife. And he's just like, he just holds
that's
up like, no knife.
That's not how you do it?
No, oh, man. Right. I don't. If somebody said, pretend you have a knife, I'm like, you know what? You know, well, let's just go watch TV. Let's watch the number 23.
I gotta get up early tomorrow.
If you like the number 23, we gotta split ways.
Yeah.
Gotta...
Apparently not a lot of people liked it. It's
dude.
Rolling at like an 8%
on
the tomato
meter.
It's not bad.
Dude, but its IMDb score was similar to Clean and Sober's.
But it also got, like, Richard Roper gave it thumbs up.
I told you, man, he's an idiot.
And, like, whoever was filling in for Roger Ebert.
Because of his illness.
Yeah.
Like,
gave it. So it got two thumbs up.
Which is more of a tragedy that that Ebert had cancer. Like, this, you know?
Yeah, he wasn't there to, like...
Pull it off
the
rails.
Get, you know, Roper back on the, you know, fucking wagon.
Like, get him clean and sober.
Yeah, listen, Roper. Jesus.
So, Jim Carrey starts reading this book and imagines himself as the lead character, who's also narrating. And as this main character, he's a detective who plays the saxophone
mm-hmm.
zero times,
mm-hmm.
but talks about it once
and
holds it for most of the movie.
Mm-hmm. And his name is Fingerling.
Which is like a potato. That's a kind of potato. And then, furthermore, he has a tribal tattoo on his scrawny ass arm that we see so much of. Because he's constantly wearing a wife beater. I'm like, what kind of detective doesn't wear a shirt?
So we've got... we've got Walter Sparrow and his animal control... a career with his wife, Agatha,
like
and his
13-year-old son?
Yeah, son Robin. And then we've got, while he's reading this book, he's imagining... We have these cut scenes. Thanks, Joel Schumacher. We've got these cut scenes of Jim Carrey as Fingerling, and his wife plays the character of...
Fabricia.
Yeah, Fabricia.
Which is a dumbass name.
Yeah,
in
which
Rome.
I didn't even know it was like. At first, I
didn't
recognize her.
She didn't look the same. They made her very unattractive as his wife.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They leaned into it
like
real
on purpose.
Hard. Yeah.
And made her super hot as the
mm-hmm.
Fabricia.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, we see, like, half the movie is him him as Fingerling acting out what he's reading in the book.
Right.
And the book was, of course, written by Topsy Kretz.
Which is, like, stomach-churningly dumb.
Topsy Kretz.
So dumb.
Top secrets.
First of all, Topsy, like, change your name.
Yeah. Ah, Topsy!
Or just, like, you know, spell your name backwards, or don't give a huge hint.
Yeah.
That's what I always do. They don't give hints.
Like, he should have just...
Looking at you,
like,
the Riddler.
His name should have been, like...
Bill.
Like, I murdered her.
Bill Maher.
I murdered her.
Murdered her.
Yeah.
I'm the murderer.
I'm team murderer.
I am.
I am
a secret.
Ian T. Murderer.
Drew P. Ballsack.
Hilarious.
All right, so it's
funnier than anything that's in these movies.
Not even gonna touch any of the plot or the spoilers, because please God, don't think you should see this movie. But this, what keeps happening, is the whole idea. Or the concept behind the 23 Enigma is that if you add up dates or addresses or letters in a name, or possibly the letters' location in the English alphabet.
Mm-hmm. Like A is 1, B is 2.
Right. All of these things have a connection to the number 23. They either add up to it, or they're the number 32, which is 23 backwards, mm-hmm. which is horseshit. And then, like, they make reference to that a character's favorite color is pink. And they said, do you know what that is? And then they randomly say two numbers next to red and white, which add up to pink. And then they're like, and the divide that by 4, which is how many letters are in pink. And it's 32. You're like, I don't, why would you divide? And then sometimes it's the number 2 and the number 3 are near each other, and they're like, that's 23. You're like, that's 5, big guy. Yeah, like,
it's almost like you could get to 23 for anything if you really try.
But then they don't try, and they're like, 32. So that's
all you gotta do is get to 23 or 32, and it counts.
Or 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But this reminded me of my hilarious Simpsons moment when... they're at the White House, and Homer is counting, and he says, 4 score and 6, 4 score and 7. And he starts, like, he has a pickaxe, and he just starts going at the presidential lawn. And Marge is like, Homer, what are you doing? He's like, I'm looking for Lincoln's gold. And then Bart's behind him with, like, a wheelbarrow, and they've been doing this all day, and there's holes everywhere. And he's like, Mom... He keeps just, like, picking random spots and starts counting from there. It's like, that's what this movie is. That's what the number 23 is. It's just randomly doing stuff. And it's like, oh, it's 2. And then this over here is 3. So it's 23. You're like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Or they'll take, like, a 1 and a 5 instead of making it 6. They'll say it's 15.
Right.
Or they'll take a 15 instead of making it 15. They'll say it's a 1 and a 5.
And
he's 6.
He literally says, he's like, I just did the thing with my name and it didn't work. Unless I go by this part of my name. And you're like, well, that. No, it just didn't work. Like, also, like, no. Like, I don't know.
And, like, one of the characters in the book is the blonde. Or what's her?
Suicide Blonde. Yeah.
And apparently
dumb name.
Is saying that there's, like, some family curse or something like that the whole 23. It's got a... So, the ending of it...
Also, they're like, the number's after me. You're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. It doesn't... Numbers don't carry guns. They're not in Missouri.
Yeah.
All right? They don't have the carry law.
So, I'm not... You know, like, we don't want to give away the ending, but... I thought the ending was actually kind of interesting.
Okay. You got Shyamalan twisted on you?
Yeah, a little bit. Which, I mean, I thought was at least kind of clever.
Yeah. Because it didn't end how you thought it would.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's...
I'm not saying it's good.
I'm very much aware that you're not. And you're trying to be very diplomatic about, like...
I am.
That's the thing, is, like, just because it's a bad movie doesn't mean there can't be good things in it.
Yeah.
So, you're right in feeling that they did something well.
So
I totally support that.
With with Jim Carrey in this, after having seen him as like super goofy guy, did he seem like super uncomfortable to you in this role? Did he seem...
I thought he did a good job, but I thought it was just the worst role of all time. I thought it was so dumb, and I couldn't tell if it was his fault, like he's thought that this is what dramatic acting looks like, or if it was written so badly and he just did all he could with it.
I think he just... To me, it just seemed like he wanted to try something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we get like all these cut scenes where he's like all tatted up.
Right.
And like just like banging the hell out of...
Trying to be like a noir detective.
Yeah.
But he
like...
His pants don't fit.
And he's like he'll like smoke a cigarette, like flick it away. But when I see him do that, I just think of like him on like
in Living Smoker.
Yeah. Like on in Living Color or something doing that and it being and me just like laughing.
Right.
I have a hard time not laughing at Jim Carrey.
Right. So we're gonna give this one to Michael Keaton, right?
Sure.
Stepping out of the lead role. Michael Keaton does There is a scene where he is on the phone with his mom, and he does such a like good job of being like a very unlikable character. And I think that's sort of about that time is when he actually like wants to go back in and take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And like that part of the movie, I don't like the movie, don't like the character, but I thought he did a really good job. And like a lot of this movie had him just like looking at the camera and other pretending the camera was a person. So like during the interview scenes, or it's just like he's on the phone, like, or he's talking to the AA crowd, but it's really just like a camera. Like he did a really good job of solo acting.
Yeah. He's just a really good actor in general. This guy who can do multiple things. Like he can be, I don't know if you've ever seen The Other Guys with Marky Mark and Will Ferrell.
Yes,
he plays like the straight like commissioner,
sergeant,
whatever. And he's like really funny and like stuff like that. But then he can also be like super serious and super creepy, and you know, can
like he pulled really off Bruce Wayne pretty good.
Yeah, he really has a wide range. And I think a lot of people like when he did Batman or both, was like, okay, well. Well, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like,
but you're like, it was mostly Tim Burton.
Like, whatever.
It was
like,
the Joker.
Whatever. Yeah, like, whatever.
It was Prince.
But, I mean, it was fine. Yeah. It was good. Like, because people were, like, pleasantly surprised. But
which
I just
made
think
them upset.
He's. I just think Michael Keaton versus Jim Carrey, not in, like, a street fight, but.
I'd watch that.
I just think.
Jim Carrey would win.
If we were talking about,
longer
like,
range,
and this would be the first opportunity for both of them to show that range.
And I think that's the important thing for this conversation is this is the first one where they both wholeheartedly throw it into the drama ring.
And I think Michael Keaton did a better job in
definitely
Clean and Sober.
Because the Truman Show came up as an example, but he got to be goofy in that. Like he's like, good morning, good afternoon, good night.
Yeah.
Like that's, he got to be a caricature.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it was a great movie, really smart premise, but he did not get to do that much dramatic acting. Mm-hmm. And it was such a big deal is that, like, in that comedy, he was being dramatic.
Yeah, that's what,
you know
I,
what
mean,
I mean?
I remember when that came out. And
it was really good.
And people were like...
Same thing with The Majestic. Like,
yeah.
It was good, but he wasn't acting yet.
No, but, like, people were saying, like, oh, this is his first, like, serious...
Right.
And, like, no, The Truman Show really isn't a serious movie. It's... I don't even know what you'd call it because it's not just a comedy. It's not just a drama.
Right.
It's, you know, but
it's a little sci-fi.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of got like a, you know, like a goofy premise that actually ends up being executed pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's got creepy ass Ed Harris in it. Talk about like guys who, like,
I always think he's coaching something whenever I see him.
Yeah.
Cause he always, he's other like, bald or wearing a hat
or a headset like a he's always giving orders out or something like that.
All right, let's do cast chemistry. Whose characters did a better job working together?
Well, let's talk about number 23 because it's kind of an interesting way to set up the cast chemistry, because you had actors and actresses playing multiple roles
within a character's head.
And I think, like, Suicide Blonde plays like three different roles in that movie.
Yeah.
She plays like Suicide Blonde, and she plays like the mother of like
Topsy Kretz.
And she plays like somebody else. So I don't know, but so I mean I know the actors and actresses had a lot of different like irons in the fire to cover. But there that also left like more opportunity for cast chemistry, because even if like two actors or actresses weren't like gelling in one combination of roles, they could have in another.
Right.
But I just don't think they did in really in any of them.
I hated the kid actor.
Yeah.
And the whole point
I just hate kid actors in general. Outside of that's Stranger Things.
You can immediately think of like six examples where you're like, no, this was good. Like Matilda, and you're like, that's because all the other movies were garbage. Yeah. Like every movie with a kid is bad. Like even all of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he was bad. And the whole like dynamic of Jim Carrey's character going crazy and his family either like worrying about him or like going along with his mania to like you know talk him down was so cardboard. Like nothing against that. Maybe, you know, again, it might just be like the script was very bad and they didn't want them to go off script, but it was like cardboard. Like I don't know if you actually like each other. Like I can't tell. You keep saying, oh, I love you, you're a great husband, great father. I'm like, it sounds like you're lying. Like,
so what about Clean and Sober?
I thought his sponsor, the guy with the glasses, when he goes, Michael Keaton goes there to, like, talk about something sad that happened, and he, like, invites him in while he's, like, hanging Christmas lights, like, that was a really good moment. I thought the love triangles, the shitty boyfriend. I thought him and like him and his girlfriend did a really good job. Morgan Freeman, like, kind of surprised, like, sort of they put, he's the lipstick on this turd of a movie. Like they should not, they should have just gotten a black guy. Like, don't waste Morgan Freeman on this. Like, because they're clearly just going for like somebody who's has sage wisdom because he's lived on the streets, and I'm just like, get somebody else.
It's like Morgan Freeman's here, we might as well use him.
Yeah. So that was sort of a disappointment.
So I would say Clean and Sober by a eyelash.
Okay.
Because
I'm comfortable Clean and Sober.
Because I don't, I mean, I'm not really comfortable with either one of them saying they had a lot of cast chemistry, but I think there was moments where the actors in Clean and Sober had, you know, especially with like the sponsor, you know, relationships and the counselor relationships. I think there was some moments there that were worthwhile.
Yeah, I agree with
Whereas I don't really think there was anything as far, you know, far as chemistry worthwhile.
Especially because there was only like eight people in the whole movie.
Yeah, and
those cops 23. Those cops were pretty good actors.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
No, that was a joke. They're bad.
No.
They're bad at that too. Yeah. All right, which character... Michael Keaton or Jim Carrey brought more of their persona, like integrated it, their comedic styles into the dramatic role better.
Okay, so this is another one where I don't feel comfortable with saying either one of them. So I'm going to say Leslie Jones did a better job of it. But
she might win. She might be the better actor.
I'm totally comfortable with
LJ
with calling that.
The only comedic thing that happened with Jim Carrey, besides, I guess, playing the saxophone and having a hilarious tribal tattoo, was that the cat part in the beginning.
Yeah.
Where he or the dog part where he pretended to be a cat. That's the only thing
And there was when he, shortly thereafter, when he goes to catch the dog and he's going through, like, the Chinese restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And the Chinese guy is just talking to him in Chinese and he can't understand him.
That's good, yeah.
And Jim Carrey's just basically saying... Yes, I'll have a double order of that. Thank you very much.
And he tells the story...
That sounds wonderful.
...to the dog about how dogs are eaten in China. You're like, nice.
Yeah.
You get to be classy and racist. I love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'd give it to the number 23 just because, like, Michael Keaton is, like, not... has no like comedic charm or anything that comes through.
I gave it to Clean and Sober because of two reasons. When he's being, because
you think Addiction's hilarious.
I think with Michael Keaton it might be. Who knows? I just don't want to be in a love triangle with him because I might die.
Like, yeah, you're probably gonna die. But you get a lot of free cocaine.
A lot. Nothing's free, Dan. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. I thought it's da 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 da. Am I later?
Yeah, I think you think I'm coming to DeVita.
Yeah. It's songs about cocaine.
Right.
Cocaine. Well, now I got a song that I can put in here.
She don't lie. She don't lie. Cocaine.
Looking at you, Clapton.
Yep.
All right. No, I gave this one to Clean and Sober because the job interview scenes, I thought he was doing a pretty good job. When he's kind of being a dick, he's pretty funny. Like when he's like still trying to get, like he's on the phone with his like dealer. I thought that was like him being sort of over the top funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's like peeing in front of Morgan Freeman. I mean, like, both of them, I laugh. Mm. I'm just like, yeah. This is making...
But there's like an under... He's you letting can it see be, like an underlying
yeah,
more comedic
human.
Charm
yeah.
to it, despite the how sad the premise is.
Right. Okay. All right, let's cinch it up. Recommendability,
this
rewatchability.
This is like the worst one. This is the worst category, because I don't want to rewatch either one of them. So, out of these two movies... The one that I would want to rewatch more would be the original Ghostbusters from 1984, which
Dan Aykroyd, yeah. Big Dan Aykroyd fan over
so
here.
So the reason that was in my head is because in the movie in Clean and Sober, Michael Keaton is talking about overdose and compares her to
the
John Belushi.
Yeah. John Belushi'd in my bed.
Yeah,
you're like. Is that a
It's like the Cleveland Steamer, which I don't know. The Poughkeepsie Plowboy.
I got nothing.
I don't know what that is.
I don't want to tell you what they are.
But apparently Michael Keaton was offered the role of the Bill Murray role in Ghostbusters originally.
Right.
And that role was originally created for John Belushi.
Who was 23. No, yeah. I don't know.
And if you take the letters in John Belushi...
Subtract two of them arbitrarily.
Because there's two names. John Belushi is two names.
I didn't even think about that.
First, dude, I'm telling you, there's... If we wanted to get to 23 with anything in this room right now, or in this massive recording studio that we're in right now...
Right.
As there's dogs barking in the background and...
And cars and ambulances. Yeah. This is the city, guys.
And a homeless gentleman, like just keeps staring in the window.
That's Ron. He's got a home.
With his hands down his pants.
Where would you keep him?
That's true.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
That's true. We're talking about Ghostbusters.
You were talking about Ghostbusters.
So that role was originally created for John Belushi and offered to Michael Keaton in it. He mentions the John Belushi in my bed.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, John Belushi.
Taken too soon.
Well, when I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to tell him that you killed the wrong Belushi.
And God's like, yeah.
He's like, I know.
He's like, but.
He goes, mistakes were made.
You saw 13 Reasons for Dating My Teenage. Was that him?
No.
Oh, that was the other guy.
No, that was.
He died too.
Yeah, he did die. That was the guy from Three's Company.
Oh.
John Ritter. Yeah, rest in peace, man.
That poor guy.
We're talking, we're down. This is a downer.
Oh, so
it's a downer show, man.
So, which one are you recommending? Oh, so you made
Ghostbusters. I said Ghostbusters.
So I'm going to recommend, because I play by my own rules, I'm recommending number 23.
Yeah.
Just so that you could watch it and be like, that doesn't add up to 23. Or, you know, just like, the movie did have some layers, but they weren't good. And I would recommend it to other people where it's just like, see how conspiracy theorists, this is what crazy ones look like. Like, I like conspiracy theories as fodder for good fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm super interested in that. I would think that would be great to, like, especially if they don't pan out, that's even better. Mm-hmm. But just, like, listening to how crazy some people can get is entertaining. But this is just, like, they're pulling at straws. From the get-go, you're just like, you couldn't do anything stronger than, like, Hitler's birthday and like somebody else's, like when they, like Shakespeare died on 23, like those two people are drastically unconnected, yeah. Like to the point where like none of it makes sense.
They said like the day Charles Manson died,
or like went to jail or was sentenced, yeah, or like something that.
But apparently, like,
what does that have to do with 23 though?
But apparently, it wasn't. They didn't even get the year right. It was like the next year, so it didn't add up to 23.
But
if you, subtract,
Charles Manson had a brother, and 24 is a brother of 23.
That's true.
Oh, you know what was hilarious was when he was looking at the clock. And it was 11:11, and then it turned to 11:12, and you're, and then they like did a sound effect. They're like, boom. You're like, oh.
Yep.
You're like, wait a second. It. This happens at 11:11 or 11:12 twice, and then 12:11 twice.
My birthday is February 3rd. 2-3.
You're like
23.
You're like, not February 23rd.
Nope. Yeah.
And then one guy's like, happy belated birthday.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Right on.
Dude. You guys need a better police system.
So the thing about my pick is I'm also going with the number 23.
Oh boy.
Which makes no sense because it's the of the two movies, it's the worst movie.
Oh yeah.
But
definitely.
That would be the one that I would say watch it because number one, because it's less depressing.
Yeah.
Than the other
it's
one.
It's also shorter by a little bit.
Yeah. Clean and Sober is just like super depressing.
Yes. To the point where like it doesn't, you don't even want to not do drugs. Like, it's not a Requiem for a Dream sort of thing. It's just like, I don't want to watch this movie.
Yeah. But at least, like, in the number 23, I could see how somebody would, like, look at all these, you know, different concepts of 23 coming up and thinking that is cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not me. Or you.
Because they do, like, drop stuff that you can, like, you find out on your own. Like,
yeah.
Little trivia bites for the, like, for the attentive eye.
Yeah, like the license plate.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you're like, oh, that's...
Like, you start looking...
That's stupid.
Yeah, like, but you start looking for things, like, in the movie, like, as it goes on. You look, like you said, the clock and, you know, like, name tags and stuff like that. And I could see how somebody would find that interesting. And even, like, somebody who's, like... A quote-unquote movie review expert like Richard Roper liked it.
Yeah.
And like whoever that douchebag is that filled in for Roger Ebert that day liked it too. So there's obviously people that...
Are dumb.
Yeah.
Dumb idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dumb idiots in this world.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, there's at least... a section of people that you could say, well, watch this movie, and there would be a section of people would say, oh, that was kind of intriguing, kind of interesting.
Right.
But if somebody watches Clean and Sober, they'll be like, well, that was fucking depressing. Like, why'd you make me watch
that? Like, Michael Keaton did a good job acting, but I could have just watched Birdman.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like...
Like, why'd you make me watch that? It's like, because this is an intervention.
Yeah.
You do too much cocaine. Like, Mike!
You... Oh,
Mike!
That makes sense that you did pick this movie.
I did. This is my way of, and all your friends and everything are gonna come through the door in just a second. We're gonna confront you.
Birthday party.
Yep.
Couple months early.
You're like, right. Birthday party. Let's do some cocaine.
You're in.
Yep.
You're in.
Nope.
Who brought the snow?
Nope.
Is that what it's called?
I think so.
I need a package delivered. Oh,
yeah.
I don't think you wink on delivered.
Nose candy.
Yeah.
Booger sugar.
The devil's headlight? No, the devil's dandruff?
Devil's dandruff. That's great.
It's not bad.
Yeah, we used to work with somebody that called marijuana
the devil's lettuce.
I never heard that before. It's great.
Yeah. All right, so we're leaving this train wreck, and we're going to recommend some movies that you might actually want to watch.
Clean and Sober wins, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, five to three.
Clean and Sober is the better movie of the number 23 and it.
For an
actor
stepping outside of their comfort zone for the first time.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Here comes some recommendation.
Yay.
Oh, we're back. It's time for
some... Ba-ba-ba-ba!
Did you guys hear that?
Yeah. I was going to do it again, but I won't.
So we're going to come up with some recommendations where the lead of movies where the lead role is an actor that is out of their comfort zone. So yeah. A standard comedian who's doing something dramatic or scary, or a classic actor or actress. No, it's still actor, right? Lady actor.
Acting! The great John Lovitz.
Goes into...
Rest in peace.
Is he dead?
Nope.
Oh, man, don't do that. No. Dick from... Dick Solomon?
Yeah.
Third Rock from the Sun? Yeah. So, a classic actor dabbling in comedy. So, Dan, do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
Well, I actually got two just in case I got the same one as, okay. as you did. So, why don't you go first?
I picked Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
I recommend it.
Like, seriously?
Yeah,
like,
definitely. Okay. No, it's a good movie because it manages to do the thing where they let his character sort of be reactionary to a... unusual situation. So it's not a comedy, but they let the character be funny, and they also like it's also his reaction to some of the stuff is funny, but it's not a comedy. It's Stranger Than Fiction. It's I wouldn't say it's fantasy, but it definitely has some like almost supernatural.
What's the premise of it?
A man works at a office, and Will Ferrell. And all of a sudden, one day, he hears a woman narrating what's happening around him. And it goes from there. That's the premise. Okay. It's like, that's the 30-second trailer. And he tries to make it stop. He tries to figure it out. He tries to talk to it. And it's a really good role for him because he takes it seriously. He's not a goofy character, but like he like starts to get kind of go crazy about it. And it's got, like, he gets to show his chops, and I've seen him in some, the movie they recommended was Everything Must Go, but it was just too sad. I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a bad movie. He did a really good job, but it was just too sad. I want to recommend it.
I got you.
So, Stranger Than Fiction, it's sort of like, I wouldn't say it's a cult movie, where it's like, you know, it has a rabid following, but it's definitely like a hidden gem. Like, it's worth your time, less than 2 hours. It's got a really cool premise, and I think he does a great job.
So I have kind of an obvious one, and then kind of one that's...
Painted Wagon. Damn it, Dan.
Nope.
Is it Two Sides?
Nope. It's not Hugh Jackman.
Two Sides!
What are you thinking about for Hugh Jackman? Just like Les Mis, or...
Yeah.
Okay. That guy does everything.
Yeah, man.
He's just like the most talented man on the face of the earth.
He knows it, too.
Yeah, he'll let you know.
I just saw Logan. No, I didn't just see it, but when I saw Logan, I'm like, dude, this is a good movie.
It's really good.
Like, he does a really good job.
It's really good. And then next thing you know, he'll be, like, doing Oklahoma and singing and dancing and shit. And
yeah.
Doing it better than anybody else.
Better than me.
So, yeah.
I mean, I've tried it. I failed.
the obvious one was The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger.
Okay.
You know, because before that, he had done, like, 10 things I Hate About You.
Great.
And like The Knight's Tale.
Bad.
Knight's Tale's good. So,
pretty sure.
Both were kind of like we
Lords
had like
of a, Dogtown. Was
yeah.
He's like a skater boy.
Yeah.
But he was just like a youth.
Yeah.
For most of those movies,
he's just like a teen angst
or like
kind of thing. Yeah. And like Knight's Tale's kind of like, you know, action comedy.
Yeah.
So he's always kind of been like a kind of a goofball like. You know, I guess in 10 Things I Hate About You, he was kind of like a...
romantic comedy.
Outsider who kind of comes, you know...
Because he had an accent.
Yeah.
And he was... They didn't like him as well.
Yeah. Good movie, though. I like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, it's great.
But
yeah.
In The Dark Knight, he's just fucking nuts, man.
Yeah.
Like, and apparently he got very into the role.
Yeah.
And would like...
he was in The Patriot. I forgot about
that.
Yeah,
I forgot about The Patriot, too.
But, I mean, that's not a serious role.
No. It's not, like, creepy, like, murdering guy like he is in Dark Knight. I mean,
correct.
He kills a lot of people.
Blows up a hospital.
Yeah, blows up a hospital. Like
dresses
like a nurse.
Kills and, everybody in his team so he can steal all the money.
I mean, and he became, like, the definitive Joker.
Yeah.
But
he sort of took the Jack Nicholson approach.
Yeah.
And
that was another one where, like, when he was cast,
yeah.
like, just like Michael Keaton in Batman, everybody was like, well, God, this guy isn't, like, made, you know, ready for this.
Right.
He isn't made for this. And he did such a good job.
Definitely.
To the point where there's, I mean, and there's conflicting rumors about whether or not, like, he got so into the role that it kind of, like, fucked up his life.
I'm pretty sure that was just the drugs.
But, like, yeah,
And then he saw the movie, the number 23. He's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Can't get better than this.
Yeah, it's not worth living.
If I can't be Jim Carrey, I don't want to be anybody.
But, God, he was creepy and murderous and funny and, like you kind of felt bad laughing at what he was doing.
Right.
But just such a departure from what he had done before and actually got an Academy Award for it posthumously.
That's awesome.
And then
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was, you know, talk that there was a lot of disappointment that that movie was not nominated for Best Picture that year. It was because it was nominated for Best Picture by, like, the Screen Actors Guild.
And, like, Teen's Choice Award or something.
And usually, like, the Screen Actors Guild, like, mirrors what the Academy does. But I guess
they... Politics, brother.
Yeah. They just they didn't want to nominate a comic book movie for Best Picture. But he did win, pretty handily. Best
Supporting Actor?
Yeah, Best Supporting Actor. And then my other one is From Dusk Till Dawn. With George Clooney.
George Clooney's such a good actor.
He does
a pretty good job of picking movies besides a couple of his early ones.
And before that, he had really just done
ER?
ER, yeah. And, like, he was on Roseanne.
I forgot about that.
And so he was just kind of like the, you know, some drama, but mostly just like the hunky, like...
Everybody's supposed to like him.
Yeah, likable guy. And in this one, he plays like... he's all tatted up, and he's...
he's a criminal.
Yeah, he's a criminal, and Quentin Tarantino's in it.
God damn it.
I think he might have produced it, because I think it's a Robert Rodriguez movie.
Yeah, they work together.
And they're buddies.
Troublemakers Studios.
And Salma Hayek's a hot vampire stripper.
Oh, spoilers! With a snake.
Yeah.
Because that's what vampires are all into. Yeah.
But the premise of From Dusk Till Dawn is they go to this bar... And I guess...
To, like, hide from the fuzz.
Yeah.
Because they just...
Or the Federale or
did
whoever.
Did they rob a bank or something?
Yeah, something.
I started to watch the From Dusk Till Dawn TV show.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, you don't need to do that. The movie's really good, though.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's... That's, like, the perfect word for it, is that as not fun as Clean and Sober is, this is so much fun.
Because it's supposed to be scary, it's supposed to be funny, it's supposed to be action.
Yeah, and we've got vampires, and they're basically stuck in this bar. They have to make it to morning.
Right.
Because that's when the sun will come out, and, you know,
tomorrow.
And the sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be no vampires.
I don't know the rest of the song.
Not bad.
Annie, we're coming for you.
Taking the shit on the road. Coming for you, little...
Two sides.
Privileged white girl.
two bros. That's...
And your little dog, too.
Ah, I don't want a dog.
Yep.
Yeah, I got a couple.
But I just... Tom Savini is in it. You know, the guy that... I only talked about him when we were talking about, like...
he's the George Romero.
Yeah, exactly.
Makeup artist.
But he's, like, actually... He plays... Sex Machine in this movie.
Definitely gets... I think he gets murdered
and
pretty brutally.
He does, but he also has some cool scenes where he has a gun in his belt buckle that he pulls out and kills some vampires with. And it's just fun, man. It's just like we make holy water, hand grenades and like water balloons and stuff like that.
George Clooney's been in so many movies. And it's sort of the thing where it's like Brad Pitt in Inglourious Basterds, where it's just like... He's having a good time.
Yeah.
Like, he can do serious stuff, you know, he can do action stuff, but I like when they let them be goofy.
Yeah, and this was, like, the first time where we kind of saw a different side of him, and then from there, you know, he's...
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, I mean, he's done, like, movies like that where he's, like, singing, and then he's done, like, comedy, or he's done, like, romantic comedies, and he's done, like, you know, Up in the Air, which is, like, you know...
It's supposed to be serious.
Drama, and he's done...
Yeah. Michael Clayton's really good, too.
He's done, like, war movies? Has he done any war movies?
Yeah. I can't remember which one. I know what you're talking about.
Okay. But, I mean, he kind of just showed that he can do, like you were saying, he's just a really good actor. He can do, like, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing, I think, with Heath Ledger. We didn't get to see because he died so soon after that movie came out.
And that's,
it's like, who knows what he could have done,
especially,
you know,
because
after, you know, showing his chops in that movie.
That's the thing, is you sort of get to, if you put in enough like good acting mm-hmm. in one thing, they usually let you try new
yeah.
stuff. But sometimes that takes age too. It's like, you're going to be funnier when you're older. Like mm-hmm. Robert De Niro started doing some of the funny stuff.
Yeah.
And it's shit, you know, because he waited too long. Where it's yeah. like, he was just cashing stuff in.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
I mean, he does like mostly comedy now.
Yeah.
You
that's
know,
not
after
good.
Being like, you know, the greatest
very serious
dramatic
actor
of like a generation,
Raging
arguably.
Bull,
yeah.
Like Godfather 2,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything with Scorsese. It's one of those things too where it's like Denzel Washington's only doing action movies now, and you're mm-hmm. like, I don't buy it. Like, go. You're like, you were a good actor. Just
mm-hmm.
you know, Man on Fire is the only action movie I liked him in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that was. What about Deja Vu? That was more of a time travel movie. But I mean, like, not like the Book of Eli, where he's like a badass with a sword
mm-hmm.
in the post-apocalypse. I'm like, you know what?
Meh.
Not for me. Just
Meh.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Hang up your spurs.
I like Glory. Glory's good.
Was that an action movie?
No.
I know it's in the Civil War.
It's got action. It's more drama.
Dan, come
but,
on.
You know.
You don't like following the rules. All right. So, Dan, do some plugs. Do plug it up.
For the three people that listen that actually like wrestling.
Yeah.
I do my wrestling podcast, which is blowing up. It's blowing up.
I subscribe. Don't listen sometimes.
Yeah, don't. You don't ever
200 minutes is a lot of time
it's
to
a
listen
lot.
To something.
We
I'm...
talk a lot about fake fighting, so
people get hurt, though.
Rhino Wrestling Review is on iTunes, and it's also on ProWrestling.com now, because we're on national, bitches.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
Excellent.
And follow me on Twitter, at Dan Rhino. Follow me on MySpace.
Because
I don't know if
it's Rhino69er.
Yeah, I don't know if I
Rhino69y.
I'm sure if you Google my MySpace, it'll probably like still pop up. My MySpace used to be dope, man. I used
no,
to have like music
don't.
Playing
That's
and
wrong.
Like all my favorite videos were like on the right side. And
dude,
yeah.
MySpace sounds like trash.
MySpace was the shit.
I missed it.
For
so I'm good.
For Facebook came along and ruined everything.
Don't you use Facebook?
I
look
do.
Up Dan on Facebook.
Look up me on Facebook. You can. I friend everybody because I grew up fat and didn't have a lot of friends. So I take all the
all comers
all the
welcome.
Yeah, even the what are the
bots?
Yes, exactly. I was like thinking about the word the spam accounts. They're like, come watch my videos. I was like, all right, I'll friend you. Like, just send me all your spam, I'll take it happily because I want friends.
It still counts as mail.
Yep.
Still
counts as friends.
So this has been Comparing Apples to Oranges, and today we compared Clean and Sober with Michael Keaton and The Number 23 with Jim Carrey to decide which one was a better movie where an actor stepped out of their comfort zone.
And we watch them so you don't have to.
Please, God, don't watch them.
Yeah, watch the recommendations.
Yeah, we told you three movies and
yeah.
talked about many more, so go check that stuff out.
Yep.
All right, this is Mike.
Daniel.
We're signing off.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to episode 19 of Comparing Apples to Oranges, the podcast. I don't have my usual script in front of me because my computer crashed and I had to erase Microsoft Word and I haven't put it back on. So we're going to see how much I can remember off the top of my head. If you like this episode's music, it was Thumbs Up by the artist Leisure B. You can check him out on humanworkshop.org. Also, if you want to check out Dan's cool stuff, go ahead and look him up on iTunes, or you can check out our Tumblr account, which is comparingapplestooranges.tumblr.com, or check out the Twitter or email us some good ideas for the next episodes. We've got the Twitter is at Cato Podcast. The Gmail account is catopodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in November. Bye.